Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters, our new Saturday morning agricultural news program. Let me introduce you to your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
A good Saturday morning to you. I've watched the news all week. I've read multiple newspapers, online articles from ABC to Fox to CNN, and I've listened to radio across the spectrum. I could say we're at war with ourselves, but I'm a 70-year observer of democracy, and I believe our government will end this shutdown at some point in the near future, and we will just move on. It's who we are. Our form of government is messy. Our fights fill into the streets. Our political differences rise and fall. There won't be a resolution to this bickering, but that's the basis of open government. We just have to lead our lives. Sometimes the swirling politics hit us. Farmers, business owners, federal employees, we all get a turn in the barrel, and you might think the only true harmony is in heaven. But it could be in a grain bin. I've been putting this show together since September. The total audience is now up to 14. So I'm guessing no one except the board operator at KXEL, who is chained to the console, has heard all of them. Each week, I've tried to look for music that's either thematic or unusual. I look for an agricultural theme, if possible. On YouTube one day, I stumbled onto this. I've used it several times since. It's a trombone that was played in a grain bin. It may sound dumb to go into a grain bin with a horn, but the hollow round chamber gives voices and instruments a stronger presence. In the YouTube recording, which is quite good, the young man playing the trombone invited the Bethel College Choir to a brand new 100,000 bushel bin. He rolled out a red carpet and ushered them in. Here's the Bethel Choir singing, "I Went Down to the River to Pray." Tell me this music doesn't move you. At the end of the show, I'll close with an unknown group who crawled into a cone-bottom bin like you have at a hog farm, about 1,000 bushel size. The camera showed mostly feet, but about 6 people were in there singing America the Beautiful. That's what it is, you know. If you look at your friends and fellow man, the fields and farmsteads, the cities and towns, it is beautiful. So, let's get started. Today we have to deal with the government shutdown's impact on agriculture and on those who depend on farmers, everyone who eats. Dustin Hoffman, reporter for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, will bring us up to speed. If you were late getting your fall harvest in and later getting your total yield to the Farm Service Agency, all is not lost. It's just delayed. There was some movement this week in the U.S.-China trade dispute. Anna Hastert will give us an update. Also, the 2018 Farm Bill was passed last month, but has yet to be fully implemented. The chair of the House Ag Committee spoke about how they got it done and what it will change. This is Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Every producer has questions, like, what's my break even on corn? What happens if I expand the herd? How much can I afford for cash rent? These and other financial questions can now be answered with Magnify, the revolutionary management software from Farm Credit Services of America. Magnify helps deliver the financial insights you want for the profit you need. Learn more at fcsamerica.com/magnify, powered by Farm Credit.
Are you confident in your crop insurance? If you make the same insurance selections year after year, you might be paying for more than you need or not fully covering your risk. That's why Farmers Business Network now offers crop insurance. We use data to help you make smarter coverage decisions. Get a free personal analysis with our local agents by calling 844-200-FARM or visit fbn.com/insurance for full program restrictions and details. Terms and conditions apply. FBN Insurance Services are offered by FBN Insurance LLC and available only where licensed. FBN membership not required.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
Dustin Hoffman, let's talk about what's in the news on the USDA's Market Facilitation Program. The farmers who appear to be left out in the cold until the government comes back into session and the Farm Service Agency opens again. Let's back up to what the program is. Wasn't this generated primarily because of the tariffs that China had imposed on U.S. agricultural products?
Yes, Ken. This was basically put into protection. This protection was put in place to help, again, like you said, with the effects of the tariffs and the trade war with China. But also, there was some fears about other trade instability. You know, this was talked about before USMCA was really finalized as well, and in fact hasn't been ratified yet. So there was some tariff situations there as well. But again, China was the main driver of this program.
Soybean growers and hog farmers are the two that are getting most of the money. There's like $12 billion that the government put forth. Not all of it going to farmers, some of it going for market promotion, some of it going for direct food and nutrition. But in the case of the farmers that are applying for it, what are the numbers as far as the dates that they need to get their certification in to be able to get the money?
Well, the original deadline that was imposed by USDA, Ken, was January 15th, and that was what was put in place before there was any chance of a government shutdown. Now, as we know, with the government shutdown, that's put that deadline in jeopardy because the FSA offices, where the farmers need to go to certify these yields, are closed because of the government shutdown.
But it seemed reasonable that the Secretary of Agriculture said, we're going to extend the deadline by the number of days the government is closed. So really, he bailed people out pretty easily, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's what it turned out to be. It was an easy and basically common sense way of doing it because, you know, it was a matter of they're going to extend it by the amount of business days the FSA is closed. So right now we're at 20 days that the government's been shut down. Well, you factor out some Saturdays and Sundays there, you know, you're looking at about 2 weeks worth of business days. So 10 days or so in there, or maybe a little more, 10, 12 days. But again, that will allow some extension. But again, these farmers have to have these numbers put together. I know when speaking with Amanda DeYoung, head of the FSA in Iowa, you know, right before the shutdown, she was urging farmers to go in and get that done. And, you know, even though we're going to see a deadline extension, it's not going to be by a whole lot, basically, when you think about it, after the fact of how many days the, you know, the government is shut down.
Well, I know we had a late fall, and we had a lot of people who were slugging it out into November, trying to be able to get their harvest in, and possibly some ran a little bit later than that. But realistically, anybody who would stay on track to certify would have gotten their first check several weeks ago. Right?
Yeah, actually that was the case, Ken. I mean, those who had already certified got their first payment, the first half of the payments. And in fact, those who have certified the second half payments should be out or on their way. They haven't stopped sending those checks out, even though the government is shut down, because the program was already signed up for and the money was already figured out. So that money should have already been delivered to those who certified.
So is it political right now? I mean, the Washington Post this week ran a front page top article about a farmer in Virginia. His name is John Boyd, and I happen to have a history with that man because we interviewed him back in the AgriTalk era, and he's president of the Black Farmers Association then and now. And he was saying, I can't get my money to buy diesel fuel and soybean seeds, and I need them both right now. Dustin, it's January. Why do you need soybean seeds right now?
You know, even with a longer and earlier growing season in Virginia, I just don't see the need for the seeds right now. To say it's political, now the whole thing in the government shutdown, we could talk for hours on the politics there, Ken. But for right now, I mean, the USDA has a plan in place to extend it. When you think about it, I mean, you're looking at a amount of money that will amount to, you know, getting paid for half the bushels you raise at I believe $1.64 or $1.65 per bushel. So it depends. I mean, how much you've got laying out there of bushels that you've produced, that if that's going to be enough to buy your seed and your diesel fuel for the year, I don't know how to comment to that. I mean, you must have either a low amount of input for seed or diesel fuel for the year, or you had a lot of beans that you're waiting to get paid on. However, if your harvest was already done before the government shutdown, you had ample time to get into the FSA office to get it certified, and you're going to have a chance to recertify, and the FSA will get that those checks, and USDA will get those checks processed as soon as they're up and running. But now we don't know how long the government shutdown is going to be and how long that's going to affect the timetable. But I would imagine that, you know, farmers weren't really relying on that money, you know, to be there for input costs. I mean, some of them may have been, but I can't speak to that. But to be banking on just that program that we weren't even sure the second half of payments were going to be released for sure or not until December, to be relying on that program for your input costs for next year seems a little bit foolhardy, if you ask me.
Well, I don't want to be uncaring, but I don't seem inside me to have much sympathy for people who had done nothing to go ahead and get themselves certified to get their money on soybeans. Maybe if you're a corn farmer and you got the 1 cent that was to go to you and it pissed you off to the point that you weren't going to go get it, and now you think you might, and then it's not available, maybe that's a little bit different twist.
Yeah, you know, that'd be about the only way of looking at it. You know, there were some farmers now out in the southeast, they did have some flooding issues in different states, and we've had late harvest and flooding issues here in Iowa. But other than that, other than Mother Nature keeping you from finishing up your harvest where you couldn't certify, that'd be about the only thing where it would land out of your control.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, which many people still refer to as food stamps, is supposedly outside the realm of being affected by the government shutdown. But is it or not? What's your answer? Is there an issue with that program running out of money?
You know, if you would have asked me up until the early part of this week, Ken, I would have said that, you know, from what I understood, that this was an essential service that was going to be funded because of the fact that there are so many people that rely on the SNAP program. But, you know, coming into early this week, we started hearing rumors that the program may not have funding to carry on much further because of the amount of money it takes to fund it every month and the amount of money that was that usually on hand to allow the program to be funded.
So anybody who is complaining about this, apparently the response from the Secretary of Agriculture is, okay, we're going to give you your payment on time for January, and we're going to give you February 10 days early, right?
Yeah, that's what seems to be the case right now, Ken. They're looking at working with the states individually to find out where the need is and what they need to do, but they're looking at having that deadline for the states to get in contact with the federal government to be the 20th of January so they can start issuing the payments early, so that way they can make sure that the people who need these payments are getting them when they need them.
Dustin Hoffman, supervising editor for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You work on these and other stories all week on the air and online. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Ken.
This week, Spencer Chase of AgriPulse spoke to Texas Congressman Mike Conaway. He's the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. Conaway was the holdout on putting the Senate and House bills together, but he finally relented on having work requirements for some SNAP or food stamp recipients.
As you look at the final bill, the final text that was signed into law by the president, when we're looking back on this bill in 20 years, what do you anticipate is the legacy language of this farm bill? What do you think is the one provision that really is going to jump out and stand the test of time?
I think the change in conservation title that we moved in a direction that makes a lot more sense. We didn't get it as far as we'd like to, but it's clearly moved that direction. An emphasis on EQIP and a downplaying of CSP. I think that'll be the kind of look back piece. I think the House version, SNAP reforms, will have long legs, and people will look at that and say, yeah, those reforms did make sense in the context of trying to make the SNAP program better. Didn't survive into the final bill, but did pass the House. And the legislative history around here is that once you get something through one body or the other, then it begins to have legs for perhaps future Congresses as well to take a look and say, was there wisdom with respect to what was trying to get what we tried to get done in the House bill on SNAP? But I think the longer term rural America piece. You said one, and I'll throw you about four or five. Mm-hmm. What's broadband is across rural America, and rural America has access to that. That will have long, long, long lasting impacts. And clearly, what we did with asking FCC and the USDA to deconflict their various rural development programs to make sure they're not overlapping, making sure the resources are there to make that happen, that's going to have a long term impact, a positive impact. Kind of like asking today, what does electricity in rural America mean to rural America? Mm-hmm. Just take it for granted. If you're living in rural America in the 30s and 40s and 30s and 40s, it wasn't a fait accompli at that point in time. Well, today, rural America wouldn't exist without electricity. I think the same thing will be broadband. 20 years from now, when we've got whatever the technology available at the time has broadband access across all of our country for everybody living everywhere, that'll be an impact as well.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thanks, Spencer. AgriPulse electronic newsletter is an online weekly. You can see their content by going to agripulse.com. That's agripulse.com. Ben Nully, formerly with us, now works for AgriPulse in Washington, D.C. Philip Brasher is the executive editor. Philip was the Des Moines Register's Washington Bureau Chief for many years. Sarah Wyant is the founder and publisher. She's an Iowa farm girl who spent her earlier career with the Farm Progress companies as an editor. I think Spencer and Ben are the only ones I've named who haven't been fired by someone. Having that happen to you is a badge of courage in our business. I've been fired by some of the finest radio stations in America. Coming up, Anna on China and America the Beautiful, sung in a grain bin.
We always wear a great big smile. We never do look sour. We travel all over the country, playing by the hour. Take me back to Tulsa. I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Tulsa. I'm too young to wed. Please.
We picked a fight with China early in 2018. President Trump imposed tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum in July. President Xi Jinping then imposed tariffs on U.S. soybeans, pork, corn, and many other products. Both sides have upped the ante a couple of times since then. But this past week, there were talks that appear to be ongoing and potentially tamping down the conflict. Joining me is Anna Hastert, digital editor for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Anna, where are we now in this trade dispute?
So it's actually been 6 months since the United States entered a trade war with China, which is 1 month, 2 months, even 6 months longer than some producers would like to have seen. So there's been some progress that's been made on this front recently here. This week, U.S. officials headed to Beijing to have discussions about what we can do to kind of resolve this big tension that we have between the world's two largest economies. Big deal here. And they actually extended the talks. They were only supposed to go Monday into Tuesday, but they were progressing well enough that they decided to extend it into Wednesday. So the trade talks got moved through from Monday to Wednesday. And U.S. Undersecretary for Foreign Agricultural Affairs Ted McKinney ended up saying that the talks went well, ended up to be just fine, as he was quoted saying. There hasn't been official details about the talks outside of that, what was actually agreed upon or what was what they really focused on in these discussions. And there also hasn't been a timeline for the next face-to-face interactions, but still seeing some progress on this front, thankfully.
You've been tracking the soybean growers. Of course, they have really lost the most if you look at the trade that's been hurt, although they have gotten a considerable amount of money back from the U.S. government. Swine producers probably would be second. What are soybean growers that you've been talking to saying about this?
I spoke with Bill Gordon, who is ASA vice president and also a director for the state of Minnesota. And he said, you know what? We can't get anything done if we're not going there and we're not talking to their leaders as well. We can't get anything done if we're not talking. So that's really key, is to get some more open dialogue going here and to continue these discussions.
Anna, as this China trade dispute is dragged on, are farmers still as wholeheartedly in support of the president's goals? I mean, what are the soybean growers indicating on their support now that it's 6 months since the tariffs were imposed?
Yeah, I think that we've seen farmers hold on to hope a little bit more now. I don't know if I could go as far to say that they wholeheartedly are on board with this. But yeah, at the end of the day, they want to see changes here. They've noticed China trading unfairly with the United States for quite some time now, and they want that to be resolved because they want fair and equal trade, just like we have with a lot of other countries too. So at the end of the day, it comes down to that. It comes down to what will benefit us in the long term. And you know, a lot of farmers at the beginning said, hey, we can bear the brunt for a couple months here or however long it takes so we can get long-term resolutions, which hopefully we'll see here in the near future. So they're still supportive in that sense. They want to find a resolution to this big problem. As you said, it is having an impact. Soybean farmers arguably are the ones that have been hit the hardest, and they're seeing their basis prices affected, as well as just in China as an export market. You know, they haven't purchased U.S. soybeans for quite some time now. And if they do, they purchase them, but they're not actually delivered to the country, which is actually the end goal. I mean, those sales mean nothing if they're not delivered. But yes, farmers remain optimistic. They remain hopeful and really hope to see the administration achieve something on this front.
Anna Hastert, digital editor and farm broadcaster. She puts out our daily Ag Matters that comes as an email. If you'd like to sign up for it, go to iowaagnet.com and we will fix you up with getting our newsletter each day. If our goal was to settle all the world's problems in 30 minutes, we failed. However, you should know a little bit more about what our reporters know and some perspective to go with it. Okay, back to the grain bin. We should get Sukup Manufacturing to sponsor this. People love to sing in grain bins. Here's an unknown group who crawled into a cone-bottom feed bin and echoed through a wonderful song that we all know well.